Radio Prague News.
Prime Minister Jiří Paroubek has apologized for a speech he made on Saturday evening questioning the result of the general election. An OECD official has warned the Czech Republic of the risks involved in pushing through a 15% flat tax. And Czech tennis player Nicole Vajdišová has been beaten in the semifinals of the French Open. Prime Minister Jiří Paroubek has apologized for a controversial speech he made on Saturday evening questioning the result of the general election in which his Social Democrats came second. At a news conference on Thursday, Mr. Paroubek said that while the subject of his speech was rational, the means of expression he used were wrong. Mr. Paroubek also called his emotional speech the first serious mistake he had made in his 13 months in office. In his Saturday speech, Prime Minister Paroubek accused a number of Czech journalists of being mercenaries of the Civic Democratic Party and also likened the party's policies to the communist takeover in 1948. The Prime Minister has also reiterated that his Social Democrats will not back a government of the Civic Democrats, the Christian Democrats and the Green Party. After meeting President Václav Klaus on Thursday, Prime Minister Paroubek also said that a grand coalition was currently not an option. Coalition talks are now underway, led by Civic Democrat chairman Mirek Topolánek. A coalition of the Civic Democrats, the Christian Democrats and the Greens would only have 100 seats in the 200-seat lower house. The new chamber is expected to meet for the first time on June the 27th. An OECD official has warned the Czech Republic of the risks involved in pushing through a 15% flat tax, one of the fundamental reforms proposed by the election-winning right-of-center Civic Democrats. The head of the OECD's Country Studies Division, Andreas Vergette, said that the introduction of a 15% flat tax could cause a serious revenue shortfall, and a flat tax of such an extent would make it necessary to look for savings in other areas. If these savings were not found, he said, fiscal policy could be derailed. One of the Civic Democrats' key policies is a flat 15% level of income tax and VAT, renewed privatizations, shrinking state sector and combating corruption. President Václav Klaus has vetoed a bill on compensatory alimony paid by the state for children from single-parent low-income families in cases where one of the parents does not fulfill this duty, a spokesperson for the president said on Thursday. Mr. Klaus argues that the bill supports parents' lack of responsibility for their children. The Social Democrats and the Communists have criticized this decision. Czech tennis player Nicole Vajdišová has been beaten in the semifinals of the French Open by Svetlana Kuznetsova of Russia. After taking the first set, Vajdišová seemed to lose her nerve towards the end of the second, eventually losing 5-7, 7-6, 6-2. The 17-year-old rising star had never previously reached the latter stages of a Grand Slam competition. And finally, a glance at the weather. The next few days are expected to be mostly sunny with some scattered showers. Daytime highs will reach 22 degrees Celsius. I'm Pavla Horáková, that's the news.
You're listening to Radio Prague. I'm Rob Cameron. Coming up in today's programme, extraordinary rendition. The Czech Republic is named on a list of countries which colluded with the CIA on secret flights. The Czech government joins an EU scheme to help feed the poor using leftover food. And hours before kickoff in Germany, a look back at Czech, or should I say Czechoslovak, achievements in the history of the World Cup. Stay tuned. Governments around Europe have rejected the findings of the Swiss Senator Dick Marty in his report for the Council of Europe, which claims that 14 European countries colluded with the CIA on secret flights carrying terror suspects for interrogation. Senator Marty includes the Czech Republic on a list of countries which allegedly provided refueling stopovers for the planes. The Czech authorities say as far as they were concerned, the flights were carrying US military personnel, and therefore they had no reason to intervene. But are they telling the whole truth? Radek Kohl is head of security analysis at Prague's Institute of International Relations.
Well, I would say that especially Czech intelligence services should know about the type of the flights that were operated through Prague Airport. They probably new in the vague terms what they were used for. I do not think that anybody at the high level of the ministry or the government as such knew exactly or wanted to know what's happening. I would rather say that the more intelligent members of Czech government wanted to look the other direction.
The Interior Minister, František Bublan, has said that he didn't know, neither did his ministry. His argument, I quote, "Of course we didn't know about them. If they were just stopovers, there's no way we could know about them. An aircraft is considered as sovereign territory of the state to which it belongs." Is he correct in that?
Well, I would say that largely he is correct, because if I'm not mistaken, there is moreover bilateral agreement with the United States that dates back years, if not decades, that effectively doesn't allow Czech authorities to search for details over who's being carried on board of civilian or military planes, and that would certainly prevent anybody from looking for those details in those CIA-operated flights.
Now, some European politicians argue that extraordinary methods have to be used to protect Europe from extraordinary threats, like the threat posed by Islamist terrorists. Do you think Czechs are generally supportive of the idea of extraordinary rendition?
Well, I'm not sure whether this argument about extraordinary measures being taken against extraordinary threat would bring such a positive response, especially if the human rights barrier was crossed so grossly. That is, there are countries like, for example, United Kingdom, Spain, or even France, which were targeted by domestic terrorists over decades, so they have much more experience with thin line between effective counterterrorism efforts and human rights abuses. While for most of the other countries, the terrorist threat is still rather distant, so I'm not sure whether they would, across the board, support this rather US-sounding argument.
Radek Kohl there, Head of Security Analysis at Prague's Institute of International Relations. The Czech Republic is set to take part in a European Union project under which surplus food from the EU is used to help feed the poor, after the outgoing Czech government approved the plan on Wednesday. However, not everyone is in favour of the idea. Both economists and Czech farmers have questioned the wisdom of this approach. Daniela Lazarova has the story.
Every year, part of the EU farming surplus, mainly grains, milk and sugar, is bought up by the Union's intervention fund, and some of this excess produce is used to help the poorest inhabitants of 14 member states. The Czech Republic is now making a bid to join the aid project. Once it has received official EU approval, the Czech government will gain access to EU structural funds, which should help pay for the processing and distribution of the excess farming products. The government expects this aid project to help feed an estimated 35,000 people who are living under the poverty line, in shelters or even out in the streets. Hugo Roldán of the Agriculture Ministry explains.
This help will be destined for people in unfavorable social situations, like homeless people or people that for some serious reasons have lost their homes. Within the program, it will be distributed commodities like flour, pasta, butter, dried whole milk and sugar, mostly during the last months of the year when the winter comes and the situation of these people becomes worse and more difficult.
The Czech Catholic Charity, one of the organizations which will distribute the food among the needy, has said that any assistance in helping to feed the poor will be very welcome. But not everyone is pleased with the idea. Economists say that this is just another way of helping farmers deal with their excess produce, and that the EU should restructure its agrarian policy to ensure that there is no surplus. Czech farmers, for their part, would much prefer for the government to help them sell the surplus to the developing world. Hugo Roldán says there's no question of that at present, for a very simple reason.
It's less expensive to distribute these surpluses among poor people than to give very high subsidies in order to export these surpluses to non-member countries.
And that was Hugo Roldán, spokesman of the Agricultural Ministry, ending that report by Daniela Lazarova. The Czech football star Tomáš Ujfolúsi is a tough defender who takes no prisoners on the pitch. But inspired by his aid worker cousin, Ujfolúsi has lent support to a project in which football is being used to help children on the streets of the Kenyan capital, Nairobi. Linda Mastelich has the story.
Ties between football and aid in the developing world are relatively new concepts in the Czech Republic. But in 1 year, a unique project started by Robin Ujfolúsi has made a positive impact. After seeing conditions on the ground in a Kenyan slum, Robin got in touch with his famous relative Tomáš Ujfolúsi, who plays for the Czech Republic and Fiorentina.
On mě v podstatě do toho zasvětil, co se hodlá dělat.
My cousin basically brought this project to my attention. He asked me if it would be possible to help somehow. I elected to donate some money, which they used to buy essential sporting supplies like footballs. So that's how it all started. As for the conditions for football there in Nairobi, they're really quite awful. As you can see from the football I'm holding, it's made of plastic bags tied together with string. I can't imagine playing with such a ball. So, of course, we sent footballs, and I'm planning to visit the area in the future, when time allows.
As part of the upcoming World Cup competition in Germany, Street Football World has organized a tournament in the streets of Berlin, and teams from Kenya and the Czech Republic are competing. It's just one sign that these cultures have found a link to one another, something that community workers in Africa try to achieve on a local level, like in Rwanda, where football is being used to bring together Tutsi and Hutu children and heal the wounds of a bloody civil war. Bonfas Mabuga from MISA, the Kenyan partner in this project, explains the aims of the street football project that his organization runs in Nairobi.
Basically, in street football, they create a surface where all people have the same equal chances of voices. So everyone can voice their comments equally because there's no referee, it's people controlling the game. And MISA is all about the social side of the people in the slum because we use football for social development. For instance, we have some social problems in the slum because it's a poor living area. So it's people don't have access to some basic things. And we have problems with drugs, we have problems with contagious diseases due to bad environment. So what we basically do is we try as much as we can to give a choice to young people so that when they have their leisure team, they can spend it wisely while playing football. And through this, we mobilize workforce that they can help in cleaning their areas so that we prevent these outbreaks. And we also pass information about AIDS so that young people know about AIDS.
You mentioned during the press conference that you're hoping for more concrete cooperation with the Czech side. What did you mean by that?
Okay, as you know, this could be a possibility for our people getting some trainings in Czech, like really getting satisfied in coaching field in Czech. We'll be happy to have such a thing because it will be a benefit not only to an individual but also to an organization as a whole.
Could you give me an estimate of approximately how many street kids or how many kids in Africa are involved in your programs?
I'll be specific about MISA because I'm basically based in MISA. I would say we have 17,000 youths. The estimated population in a slum is close to 1 million, and it's only a part of Nairobi. It's only a part of a province in Kenya.
So perhaps in some small way, aid from Czech football players is helping to spread a positive message in troubled areas of Africa.
Linda Mastelich with that report. Well, staying with the World Cup, that was a crackly recording of Czech radio commentary from the 1934 World Cup final as Czechoslovakia went 1-0 up through a goal by Antonín Puč. Czechoslovakia went on to lose that game and also lost the only other final the country appeared in 1962. With the current Czech team in Germany on the eve of the 2006 finals, Michael Longera looks back now at the country's history in the competition.
The Czech Republic are this year appearing in the World Cup for the first time since the state was founded in 1993. But as Czechoslovakia, the country has appeared 8 times on football's biggest stage. Now, we just heard sound from the 1934 final. That competition was actually the country's debut at the World Cup. The team with the František Planička in goal and Oldřich Nejedlý scoring freely at the other end beat Germany 3-1 in the semifinals to set up a clash with the host Italy. After a goal in the 71st minute by Antonín Puch, the Czechoslovaks were 20 minutes away from a historic achievement. Fate had its own way, however, as Italy equalized late in the game and scored again in extra time to win its first World Cup. With dictator Benito Mussolini watching, some suggested that the officiating was far from fair. Either way, Czechoslovakia didn't go home empty-handed, with the great Nedved tying for the golden boot for most goals scored. Czechoslovakia's next three appearances at the tournament, in 1938, 1954, and 1958, were unmemorable, though they did reach the quarterfinals in 38, only to be eliminated by Brazil. The 1962 World Cup in Chile saw a return to form by Czechoslovakia, who passed through the group stage by way of a draw with defending champions Brazil and victory over Spain. In both the quarter and semifinals, the Czechoslovaks managed to maintain their lead to defeat Hungary and Yugoslavia in convincing fashion, with striker Adolf Šeder tallying three goals. In the final, they faced Brazil again, and like in 34, took the lead, this time early in the game, when an all-time Czechoslovak legend, Josef Masopust, scored in the 15th minute. That joy was short-lived, however, as history repeated itself with Brazil drawing level before eventually running out 3-1 winners. Czechoslovakia were runners-up once again, but still received a hero's welcome when they paraded through the streets of Prague upon their return. The next two World Cup appearances for the country were uneventful, with the team being eliminated after the first round in 1970 and 1982. It wasn't until the 1990 World Cup in Italy that Czechoslovakia had its best result since 1962. In the first round, they scored six goals, two by Tomáš Skuhrovi, known to fans as the Bomber. They next faced off against Costa Rica in the second round, downing the football minnows 4-0, with Skuhrovi netting a hat-trick in the process, bringing the Czechoslovaks to the quarterfinals for the first time since 1962. However, they were unable to hold off the brute force of eventual winners Germany, who scored the only goal of the match, sending Czechoslovakia home.
Michael Longaro there with that report. You're listening to Radio Prague. It's time now for today's feature, and that's Czech Science, brought to you by Pavla Horáková.
In less than a month's time, a team of Czech scientists will leave for the Mongolian desert of Gobi to spend a month at a rich fossil location looking for the remains of dinosaurs. The team of Expedition Gobi 2006 are now making the final preparations and also bracing themselves for the rough weather conditions of the Mongolian desert. By the end of the project, in 2009, they are hoping to excavate and bring back to the Czech Republic a complete dinosaur skeleton to be displayed in Prague. I invited one of the members of the expedition, paleontologist Martin Košťák from Prague's Charles University, into our studio and first asked him to tell us more about the expedition.
The aim of our expedition is basic paleontological research in the Mongolian area, which is situated just near Chinese border in the south of Mongolia, in a valley which is called Nemekt. In translation, we can say it's a dragon valley because of a large abundance of dinosaurs' bones found there.
So which particular species are you hoping to unearth there?
It's quite complicated. We will be lucky when if we will find some parts of skeletons of any dinosaurs. We know for about 55 species of dinosaurs from this locality, and including several genera. And it's very interesting that we have very few predators. And most of herbivorous dinosaurs. It means if we will be lucky, we suppose we will find some herbivorous dinosaur, including some group of hadrosaurids, maybe.
And when did these dinosaurs live, and what were their living conditions like?
Dinosaurs, generally, dinosaurs in Mongolia are found in two stratigraphic levels. In Lower Cretaceous, it means more than 100 million years, and Janer about 70-75 million years old stratigraphic level. And they lived in some interesting conditions because the climate was semi-humid. It means some dry climate with seasonally strong rain during a year. It's quite known from geochemical analysis and sedimentological analysis from this era.
And how long is the expedition expected to last this year?
We expect duration for 4 years. The first year, this year, we will work 1 month in desert, and it's a reconnaissance part of the expedition. And during next years, we suppose to work 3 months in 3 months in a year, and we will see. We will see. It's quite complicated because of extreme climate there.
Now, could you describe for our listeners what a typical day on location looks like?
I would like to describe a day, but I'm not sure if I will describe the day exactly, because we have no experiences with the life in the desert. So we suppose only that we can work there only a few hours in a day. So we will get up at 6 o'clock morning, I suppose, some small breakfast, 2-3 hours work, maximally till 10 hours, and from 10 hours till 4, I think it will be some gap, some relax because of horrible weather. The weather will be 50 degrees during a day and approximately zero at midnight. So at 6 we will start again, and we will walk till 8, 9 o'clock, and it depends also of relief, of conditions, of character of rocks, and we will see.
And which tools will you be using, and how careful do you need to be when handling the skeletons?
Yes, at first it depends of characteristics of rocks. If we have some compact rocks, it will be quite difficult to excavate bones from these rocks. So it will necessary to use some pneumatic hammer, chisel, brush, engraver, and some smaller hammers, needles. But if we will find rocks which are friable, I think we can use only some small mechanical instruments, and it will be much more easy. I think it will be necessary also to conservate bones just immediately after excavating, because they are thousands of millions years old.
And how big are they? How large are the bones?
We can find dinosaurs from 1 meter long till 20 meters long. So it depends of what we will find.
And will you be able to bring the bones back to the Czech Republic?
Yes, it depends. It depends of agreement between Mongolian part and our part. Preliminarily, we signatured some agreement between Faculty of Science, Charles University Prague, and Mongolian National and Technical University. It's a basement for future cooperation, but for excavating and export, we need excavating license and export license, and we hope we will get after this year expedition.
And how is the expedition going to be financed?
It's a very interesting question, and I can say that this expedition is fully supported by commercial sphere and private sphere, so no scientific grants are put now, and we suppose this expedition will have very very large interest in Czech private sphere, and we will get some large money for this very expensive expedition.
And also, how many of you will there be? How many people are going?
Yes, this year it's there are 6 people from Czech Republic and 6 to 7 people from Mongolia, including 3 Mongolian drivers, 2 Mongolian students, a specialist on sedimentology, and 1 student specialist of paleontology, and the leader from Mongolian part, Professor Minjin, who is a famous paleontologist working in several Mongolian areas. So this is Mongolian part, and concerning Czech part, we have 1 doctor. It's he's Dr. Michal Moučka. I think for Czech public is very well known because he was the first who discovered the first dinosaur skeletons in the Kutná Hora vicinity, one technical man, and one paleobotanist, Dr. Vasilis Theodoridis, friend of mine from Faculty of Science, Dr. Martin Mazuch, specialist on vertebrate paleontology, and the main organizer, Boris Laváček. I think Czech public knows him also from Czech radio.
And Czech Science brings us to the end of this program. I'm Rob Cameron. You've been listening to Radio Prague. I hope you've enjoyed it. Do tune in again soon.
Ici Radio Prague, programme en langue française des émissions internationales de la radio tchèque, Onde Courte. Pour bénéficier d'une agréable réception, voici la grille de nos horaires en temps universel et fréquence en kilohertz. Six heures vingt-sept. Europe, 5930, 7345. 7h30, 7h57, Europe, 9880, 11600. 16h30, 16h57, Europe, Afrique Centre, 5930, 17485. 18h30, 18h57, Europe, Afrique Ouest, 5930, 13580. 22h, 22h27, Amérique du Nord, 7345, 9415. Nous vous invitons à l'écoute sur le web. Pour cela, veuillez vous connecter au site www.radio.cz/français. Radio Prague est aussi sur le satellite. Vous trouverez toutes les informations sur notre site www.radio.cz/français.